When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Support WrestleTalk!
Give us a subscribe.
Hey everybody, I'm John Cena.
Hey, it's professional wrestler Colt Boom Boom Cabana.
Hey, I'm Double J, Jeff here.
And this is Rick Swan.
Matt Riddle, the King of Rose.
I'm Rocco Cinco Romero.
David Starr.
Support WrestleTalk.
You are watching WrestleTalk.
Congratulations, you got here. Now, subscribe and support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk and please subscribe now.
Support WrestleTalk. Do it.
Support Ollie. Support Luke. Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Because we talk about wrestling, and I like it.
Support WrestleTalk.
Go subscribe.
Support WrestleTalk. Home of Luke Owen. Whatever WrestleTalk is, and whoever Luke Owen is, vote the Ravens. Nevermore.
WrestleTalk. Rumble. Go live.
Hello and welcome to the Wrestle Talk podcast. I am Chopper Pete Quinnell, and today I'm joined by housemate Simon Longdon.
Hey.
Hey, what's up, bud?
Yeah, good. Those lazy, bone-idle fools for doing a live stream yesterday.
I know. What idiots. So yes, it's me and Simon doing the NXT review today because Laurie and Ollie are recovering from their Crown Jewel live reactions that they did last night. Spoilers, we're recording this on a Friday morning. Luke is in Japan. And yeah, so now it's just me and Simon left. So yeah. By default, it's us.
That should be our tag team now.
By default, yeah. Pete and Simon. How's your week been, I guess?
Well, we've got quite an exciting meeting today. Is that interesting?
We do have an exciting meeting today. But, and we know how much YouTube viewers love change. So hopefully,
it won't be that crazy. I just think as everyone would have noticed that Ollie's been sort of asking the fan stuff. We're just trying to respond to that.
So yeah,
that's a good thing.
Yeah, exactly. We're taking your feedback on board and actually acting on it.
Yeah. We're going to have a general election here in a few months.
In the office, yeah.
Ollie is running as candidate, and I'm going to run as I'm going to be his running mate. I'm going to run against Laurie as vice. I suppose Luke would Luke be his? Luke is the sort of Joe Biden figure if this is a presidential race.
Yes.
Ollie can be Trump.
Well, it's good because Ollie doesn't listen to the NXT podcast, so you can get away with that one.
Well, then F that guy.
I've got an email here from Connor. Comes in to say, "Dear Pete and probably Dave, Simon, close enough, maybe Laurie, Luke, or anyone else in the office who enjoys a bit of Dungeons & Dragons."
Oh, hey.
There's literally one other person, and it's named Simon. like many others, I've been enjoying the recent Dungeons and Dragons rambling on the podcast. That is pretty much exclusively what me and Dave talk about on the podcast.
Oh, really?
And here,
is he in your group that does it?
Yes. Yeah. So I'm his DM, and also we're in a campaign together with someone else as the DM as well.
I see.
So yeah, we talk about D&D a lot, and when we did the Screenstalker podcast, which is coming back, by the way, for fans of the Screenstalker podcast, it is coming back. Once Luke's back from Japan, yes, we're going to have a bit of a rebrand and a refresh of the Screenstalker podcast and relaunch it, essentially. So don't
fear. In a way that actually makes sense.
Exactly, yes. In a way that makes sense, and it will be better for everyone. So you'll probably get more D&D chat on that as well. And he says, I wanted to ask some advice. I've completed a couple of campaigns now as a player, but I'm very keen to shortly be starting my first campaign as Dungeon Master. Having experienced a couple of campaigns now, I feel fairly familiar with most of the inner workings of the game, as well as what makes an effective DM and their key responsibilities. I love the idea of creating my own world and have a concept that I'd eventually like to flesh out. However, for my first stint, I feel like going for a preset campaign is perhaps the most sensible approach. That way I can focus purely on the demands of being a DM and getting familiar with the new mechanics, rather than splitting my focus with additional world building to tackle. Excuse me. And provided you agree, my question to you both slash all is whether there are any preset campaigns that you know of that might suit a first-time Dungeon Master particularly well. I have PDF copies of both Storm's King Thunder and Horde of the Dragon Queen, the first of which I've heard can be a good entry point. If you know of any others or have any further trinkets of advice to bestow upon an aspiring DM, I'd be much obliged. Thanks for consistently making each other giggle. It's rather infectious. All the best, Connor. Assuming that's about me and Dave and not about me and you, but hey, close enough.
We can only try.
Yes. My first foray into being a DM was an entirely homebrew campaign. I just made my world and just did it. And that was when I was not familiar with D&D at all. I literally started getting into D&D last August, so like a year and a bit ago. And then I think by like January or February, I'd started my own campaign. Just because I was like, I love this so much.
Yeah.
So then I just started making things, and then I just wanted to gather some people, and then I just started. So for me, it's been kind of, I jump in at the deep end and just figure it out, which seems to work. Like, I'm improving all the time. So I don't think you necessarily need to play it safe, per se. If you got the right group of people, they'll be understanding if you're a new DM. If you're like, hang on, let me just check this rule real quick. They're gonna yeah, understand. It's fine.
And ultimately, I mean, the rules are the same no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as you're familiar with the rules, that the technical side of it should be just kind of is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
I do think the benefits of the pre-made campaigns are, firstly, it depends how much time you've got to actually write mm-hmm. a campaign, because it's not just like writing a script. You know, it's basically like kind of yes no branches, isn't it?
Yeah,
everything's got to have a sort of binary thing. But the good thing about them is that when the way they're written is to kind of hold your hand through it
mm-hmm.
in a way that's very helpful. So from a player standpoint, like I remember doing what's the Dragon Queen one? That's the first main. That's like the main campaign for 5e, I think, the latest edition, I think.
I'm going to Google that right now.
Well, whatever the if you went on D&D Beyond and bought whatever the Me and My First D&D Experience kit is, whatever yeah. that campaign is, we yeah. kind of did that one. And the great thing about it is that because all the characters, every character is very simply set up, so you are given actually fully fleshed out kind of links between them all. So whilst the DM might be looking something up or working out whether someone can do something or just kind of even just reading ahead through it, or people are kind of just doing their own thing, because there's enough interaction between the characters on their own thing, you know, each character, essentially there's kind of three branching storylines of which each of the two things interact, bump into it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So I think with a first homebrew campaign, I don't know whether you had this experience or not, Pete, as a DM, mm-hmm. but I feel like the one thing that is the struggle is ensuring that everyone's got enough crossover all the time, that they are constantly interacting with each other.
Yes.
So you don't end up with just, and now for 20 minutes, me and this person, the DM will now interact with this person. Or blah, yeah. You know what I mean? So I think the good thing about starting with the pre-made campaigns is that you kind of get around that issue. It's just one less thing to worry about.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe you don't need to do a whole campaign. Just do a one shot.
Mm-hmm.
Do a couple of one shots just so you know, just to kind of get into the groove of it. And then that gives you time to maybe write one. I don't know how much time they have to write something. I think that's yeah. the one thing I would say is just, if you don't have a lot of time to write it, then give yourself time to write it.
Yes, yeah, that's what it comes down to eventually, because I thought I was so well prepared going into my first session, and then something happened in that first session. I can't remember exactly what it was, but something happened. I was like, I did not think they'd do that. And it was like, it was like something that I hadn't even thought of a possibility. Like, they went in a direction that I didn't even think was possible. I was like, oh God, I need to improv now. And I mean, it was fine. Like, we got through it and it was okay. But it was just, you need to plan a lot if you're doing your own campaign. And for me personally as a DM, I bloody love that planning process and I love creating stuff. So I'm fine with it. And I set aside time to create stuff. If you don't have that time, it's better to try and do, you know, get some assistance with it. Even if it's not doing one of the official D&D adventures, even just like finding maps online for you to use or things like that.
On that note, I highly recommend a guy called The Reclusive Cartographer on Instagram and Facebook and other things. He is my DM.
Oh, really?
It's my and Laurie's friend George. And he is... His Instagram is amazing. Look, his maps are incredible.
Oh, they're so beautiful.
He actually is digital kind of...
Yeah.
He's a graphic designer by trade and actually gets commissioned. He actually got commissioned by a few gaming companies to make maps for them and stuff. He's really, really good.
That's awesome.
And you can just go on his Instagram and see all the maps he's drawn and... yeah, so I highly recommend looking up his stuff.
Yeah, I'm just literally looking at his Facebook page right now. It's so cool.
Yeah, it's that's very, very cool. He's so good. He's sort of climbing up quite high. He's got like nearly 3,000 followers on Instagram now.
That's awesome. That's great.
So yeah, I think looking at maps is a good shout. Just indulge yourself in information, basically.
One other final bit of advice I'd give as well is don't sweat it. Like, you're not going to be the best DM in the world. Because as much as if you watch like Critical Role and you see Matt Mercer, or you're watching, you know, if you watch Chris Perkins in Dice Camera Action or anyone like that, these guys have decades of experience being a DM. You're not going to be them.
And also Matt, you know, some people like Matt Mercer, you know, he's also an actor.
They're all voice actors.
Yeah. Like George is our DM, and one of the reasons he's so good is because he's been in a proper improv comedy group for years now, since uni, so he's already a good improviser, can do voices. Like, he's a brilliant DM.
Yeah.
And you might find that you're not comfortable with that performance stuff, and you might find halfway through, that's the good thing about doing a one shot, you actually might find it's not necessarily for you.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
But whereas I think if you immediately commit to doing the homebrew thing and you find it's not quite for you, or you know you might find that you really enjoy writing them but don't necessarily feel a particular desire to do the DM side of it. So I would do a one shot first and see how you go.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Anyway, we should probably get on to talking about NXT. So let's get into the main portion of this show, where we're going to be talking about a huge War Games announcement that happened on NXT. Here's the show. Let's talk about this huge War Games announcement that happened on NXT. So it kicked off. It was set up pretty well earlier in the night with the opening match, which was Io Shirai versus Candice LeRae, which was a fun match, really fun match. Both of these are incredible in-ring talents.
Yep.
They always put on great stuff. Really, really fun match. Finish came in a really fun way where Candice LeRae looked like she was on top for once. She was actually going to beat Io Shirai and finally get that victory over her. She goes for the Lion Soul off it. Shirai moves out the way. LeRae lands on a chair that was in the ring because Shirai brought one in, lands on the chair, and Shirai gets the pin off it, which I thought was a really, really, really cool finish. But then after the match, Io goes and beats down Candice a little bit more after the match, with Rhea Ripley running up to make the save, kind of building that friendship between Rhea and Candice a little bit, and setting up Rhea having beef with Io as well as the rest of the women's division as she's had before. So that was a really nice setup for what happened later in the night, which was the big kind of actual talking point. So it was after a match, which was announced last week, which was Dakota Kai and Tegan Nox versus the Kabuki Warriors. Mm-hmm. Now, the way this match even happened was Kai and Nox beat Shafir and Duke last week to set up this match. So they've already got beef with Baszler's horsewomen. And then after the match, we'll talk about the actual match itself later on, because that was a fun experience. But then after the match... there was Green Mist was obviously involved because it's the Kabuki Warriors and that's what they do now. Shayna Baszler comes out with the horsewomen, come to like gloat about them getting beaten up and whatever. They come out and Nox starts attacking Baszler as soon as she gets inside the ring, but then the numbers game happens and they get on top again. Baszler looks like she's going to do the arm break spot, which is done to Dakota Kai, but mm-hmm. this time it looked like she was going to do it on Tegan Nox. Rhea Ripley comes back out again and distracts her so she doesn't, you know, break her arm. But before she can even get to the ring, Io Shirai comes out and attacks her from behind. Payback for what happened earlier in the night. And then Candice LeRae comes out to attack Io Shirai. Bianca Belair comes out. Everyone gets into a big, massive schmoz inside the ring. All the officials come out. It's getting all crazy. Whoa, what's going on? William Regal comes out on his little balcony thing that he's got. And he goes, you know what? I've got a real simple solution for this. War Games! And now we're getting, for the first time, a women's War Games match. The crowd were chanting War Games before he even made the announcement. They could see it coming. It was awesome. I love this.
Yeah.
I thought it was absolutely brilliant.
It was simultaneously very subtle storytelling, but also really in your face.
I know, yeah.
Just, like you said, even the fact that sometimes when you can anticipate something coming, it kind of ruins it. But actually... The fact that the crowd would obviously, like, you had the four, and it was like, this is obviously coming, come on. Like, actually was a great payoff.
Mm-hmm.
And the way all these feuds have never, some of them have sort of, I guess they've not necessarily, some of them become full blown feuds a little while ago, then cooled off, then heated up a little bit. And it's kind of like they've all managed to just keep having matches in and around each other and keep these loose, I guess they're not even alliances, they just have shared. Enemies.
Yeah, that's true.
And, you know, particularly Rhea Ripley, who just, her thing is who she doesn't like and has no feelings for who she does like.
Yeah.
And to have it all finally just coalesce like this, brilliant booking,
mm-hmm.
Kind of booking without, it sounds stupid, booking without feeling like you're seeing the booking happen in real time. Like It just kind of happened, and it felt very organic. You know, it wasn't really telegraphed almost until the very moment it happened.
Exactly.
Even though when you obviously look back, you go, oh, yeah, obviously.
Yeah, obviously they were setting this
but
up.
But they did it. They gave everyone enough breathing space to kind of, when it did finally happen, it was like, oh, brilliant.
Yeah, it was like that light bulb moment. It's like, oh, that's why we've been seeing these things.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, like, we have... predicted, I think Luke made a prediction way back when that he wants to see a women's War Games match, and we've been saying this women's division's getting really fleshed out, they're going to be setting up a War Games match, but that was still speculation. That wasn't us saying, well, that's obviously where they're going. It was still speculation, because it could very well have just been Rhea Ripley versus Shayna Baszler, and that would have still been very good booking.
And to be honest, up until pretty recently, I still thought that's what, I thought they were going to add other people to the War Games.
And
still keep that as the main. Mm-hmm. So you know, they have managed to sort of keep everyone on their toes in that sense as well.
Yeah, exactly. So it's looking like it's going to be Tegan Nox and Dakota Kai, Rhea Ripley, Candice LeRae, and probably a fifth person that is not announced right now, versus Shayna Baszler, Marina Shafir, Jessamyn Duke, Io Shirai, and Bianca Belair. Is what it looks like. That's the way they were separated and staring off at each other. It got announced later in the night that Shayna Baszler and Rhea Ripley are going to be the team captains.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming they're going to be, you know, picking people to be on their sides. I don't know whether it's going to be like a 4-on-4 or a 5-on-5, or, you know, if it is 4-on-4, who's getting left out of this? If it is 5-on-5, I'm guessing it would probably be like someone like Mia Yim would fill that fifth space for the, you know, the babyface side, unless they get someone down from the main roster or something for like a special one-off, which would be super cool. I don't know who I'd want to go down.
No, I'm trying to think if is there anyone who's sort of whose connection would make sense.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean.
Not really. Not with Rhea Ripley, no. I wouldn't say. Unless Ripley gets someone like Toni Storm to come over.
That was the other thing. Who was her Who's her? Niven, is it her partner down in NXT UK? Yeah, could be another. I think Tony Storm would be, because I think the good thing about Tony Storm, even though it makes less sense, and it does actually make almost no sense.
Yeah.
But what does make sense is sometimes it is worth just doing something for the pop.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she would get a big reaction. I'm not sure you'd get this, even though it makes more sense to do Niven, I don't think it would get the same.
Mm-hmm.
Reaction.
Exactly, yeah.
Either way, this is the perfect place to have someone debut,
mm-hmm.
And be immediately considered in the same tier. And also, by the way, kudos to the booking as well for keeping everyone. This block of, obviously there's a hierarchy there, and obviously Shayna and Rhea are at the top of that. But there's a very, very small distance between them and everyone else.
Right. Yeah.
And that everyone else, that's a lot of people who are all coming out looking strong. They've all got very individual characters. They're managing to have matches against each other without ruining each other's mystique.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very hard booking. And this is exactly the sort of thing I think everyone thought would be difficult to maintain with the 2 hours
mm-hmm.
on USA. But actually, it's helped them flesh it out more.
Yeah.
Actually, I think it would have been much harder with the original hour to allow, you know, you can't have, you know, them having that tag match against the Kabuki Warriors, you know, going 15 minutes,
yeah.
Nearly 20.
Yeah.
You can't have that in an hour long show, especially when there's Finn and whoever. Like, so I think it's been quite an incredible, like,
yeah.
Days of just a couple of months, whatever, of great wrestling booking. Simple as
yeah.
well.
Yeah, exactly. It's simple yet effective.
Yeah.
And that's all you don't need to overthink it.
Yeah.
That's all it is. We're just going to make all these women look really, really cool. Yeah. They are all really, really cool. We're going to make them look cool.
And we'll put
them in a match.
I thought one thing that was really great that actually, which I know is sometimes harder to do with the women's division just because the sort of physically they're all much more similar, I think, than you get. There's less sort of variance, I think, than mm-hmm. you get with the men's division at the minute. And I mean that just in terms of who they have as opposed to a more yeah. general comment. But having someone like Rhea Ripley, like, go chin to chin with Shayna Baszler, like, she looks massive and hard. Like, do you know what I mean? She looks so badass.
Yeah.
And, like, and actually is a bit bigger than Shayna.
Yeah.
And I think that's an interesting dynamic in of itself, that when she comes out, it's like, there is a kind of, ooh,
yeah.
This looks. These two are gonna kick the hell out of each other.
Yeah,
like, it's quite a unique dynamic that they specifically have got. And I think Rhea brings that in spades. As to Shayna, I think Shayna is one of the most underrated workers in the whole company at the minute. I think mm-hmm. The matches she's had have been consistently great, whilst also actually being probably asked to do it a bit too soon.
Mm.
But and we've sort of seen her grow.
Yeah,
but with the title, which is really hard, and a title that is genuinely coveted and only given to very good workers. So mm-hmm. I think it's continuing to put her on a platform is also great. I think she'll have a, I think she still needs to be somewhat, she's not necessarily commanding matches, like calling them herself, I don't think at this point.
Yeah.
She's been, generally speaking, people are getting great matches out of her as opposed to the other way around. I think this is another example of that where I think her and Rhea can really work together really well.
Mm-hmm.
It's very exciting.
I'm hoping that this War Games match then leads to a Rhea-Shayna match at the next TakeOver. The one that would be at Royal Rumble weekend.
And this is also the great thing, which is that it makes sense specifically for this moment for them to all to have this fight, because ultimately, you know, they've ended up in these loose alliances. They've all got common enemies. However, all of them want to get a shot at the title.
Yeah.
And that's what it's all about. So as soon as, first of all, that sets up some kind of double cross that could happen.
Yep.
Heel turn, whatever it might be. That's an option. But they don't have to do it, and it would make no difference. Ultimately, all of these women are, as soon as War Games finishes, it just becomes them all competing to get the next shot after whoever wins out of Rhea and Shayna. And like, yeah.
Yeah.
That's exactly how this should work.
Exactly. There's such a well-fleshed-out division, and they all have a motivation that makes sense, which is, I want the title. I want to be the best.
Yeah.
So I want to get that, and this is the way to do that. It's just logical, sensible booking at its best.
Yes.
And it just makes everyone look great. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. All you have to do with wrestling booking is very simple.
Yeah.
Give. I think problem is, I think WWE tries to book through character too much.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what NXT does is a bit more the old school, which is because you don't, you just, you basically just say, well, you want to do this. And then your character would have feelings about that.
Yeah.
As opposed to saying, well, because you're like this, then you would say this. And then, do you know what I mean? Like, it can't, they often do it the wrong way around. Whereas mm-hmm. I think here, they've just kind of gone, well, they all want to win the title. So I guess now, as their characters, they would probably have thoughts and feelings about that. Yeah. How would they react to that? And then they just do that.
Exactly.
That's exactly how you should do it.
Exactly. It's almost as if they're real people.
Incredibly. It's a stark realization.
Yeah, I know.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Anyway, let's get on to the main portion of the show. Mm-hmm. Thoroughly excited for that Women's War Games match. So like we said before, the show actually opened up with a musical performance from Poppy.
It was fine.
It's all right.
It's not really my thing.
No, definitely not my thing either.
You know why, though? Almost entirely because she does that that sort of high-pitched voice. She's doing a bit.
Yep.
And I personally find that a bit inappropriate and annoying, but that's just me. But that's just me.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. I thought that they used this for a random episode of NXT and not a takeover.
Yeah,
bit weird.
It felt like, I wonder whether it's because they're gonna. Was that actually them changing the Slipknot song to her? Because she was a different. She started with a different song, didn't she? And then went into
yes.
So maybe that's what they're doing. Maybe they've run out of whatever license they had for that Slipknot song.
Who knows? Bit weird, but whatever. That leads straight into an entrance from Io Shirai being played by Poppy, which was all right.
It's cool.
Yep.
She did her little.
Yeah. Yep. She did. Wasn't really into it, but it's whatever. It's not my thing. Sure. I'm sure loads of people enjoyed it. That's fine. Candice LeRae comes out afterwards, and those two have a match, which, as mentioned before, was super duper fun. Really, really cool.
There was one thing I did notice, which they teased in the match doing two big spots.
Mm-hmm.
They teased an apron spot, and they teased something off the top turnbuckle.
Mm-hmm.
And actually didn't go through with either of those spots. They teased them instead. And I thought that was interesting because that actually, at the time, I was like, oh, shame that didn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
And then by the time the finish comes around, hitting the chair, suddenly that now had the impact ahead. I think if they'd done some crazy backdrop on or German suplex onto the side of the apron, suddenly the match wouldn't have had the same
exactly.
pace. It was actually quite...
Yeah.
It was some smart wrestling there.
Yeah, because the finish, like we mentioned before, was Candice LeRae going for a lion salt, missing, and because Shirai had got a chair, she lands on the chair, and Shirai just pins her straight off that. Mm. No extra moves or anything. And I had no qualms with that being the finish.
No.
And, you know, that seems like a quote-unquote weak finish because there was no, like, big move or anything, and it's just a chair shot kind of thing. It's whatever. But, like, it made perfect sense for the match. Like, there was no... When that finish happened, I wasn't like, oh, that made Candice look rubbish. Because they built up that sort of spot with the chair. They built up that the chair is going to be the thing that, like, ends someone. Like, they really built up... Shirai went and got the chair and was, like, really going to get her with it. And they built it up and the crowd were going, no, like, you can't hit her with the chair. And then the ref, like, grabs the chair off her. So they built up the chair as, like, this big ending thing. So then when Candice hit it, it was like, oh, that's the end.
Yeah, it's like, this is the thing. I think sometimes, because everyone kicks out of everything now,
mm-hmm.
I think sometimes that gets used too often. But the great thing about this match is, and any wrestling match, is you set your own context.
Yeah.
If you can make anything seem like the biggest thing in the world, and you can create that payoff, and that's what they did. I was totally fine with it. And also, I do want to watch a world of wrestling in which landing face first on a chair from sort of 7 feet up should be somewhat damaging.
Yeah.
And I was
might be enough to win a match.
I'm not against that being a thing.
Exactly, yeah. And then as we mentioned before, Rhea Ripley runs out and makes a save. She kicks the chair out of Io's hand because she'd picked it back up again, which was cool. She runs her off. Cool stuff. Great opener. Loved it.
Yeah.
Io gets a great win stuff. Again.
Candice, it was a great match anyway. Like they both look great.
Yeah, both look great coming out.
I think Candice is unbelievable.
She's great, isn't she?
Brilliant.
I love both of them. We get the announcement that it's going to be Undisputed Era. That's Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish versus Matt Riddle and Keith Lee, which is going to be the main event of the show. Cool.
Well into it. I could watch Keith Lee wrestle
forever.
Yeah. I'm obsessed with Keith Lee.
He's so good. There was a little video package next for Finn Balor, which I thought was awesome.
It was really cool. Using all the sort of TMZ style footage and him being sort of in character.
Yep.
Throughout, you know, and there's also, I think, the same with all good wrestling characters, there's clearly some truth in in this character. This is...
Sure.
He really is this pissed off the way his run has gone.
Yeah.
And he's right to be, and it's honest, and...
It comes across. It's really, really good. Yeah, he was thoroughly in character. He did an appearance on, the backstage show that they've got now. Then, like you said, there was a TMZ interview, and they spliced all these clips together, and they showed video footage of his turn last week against Gargano and stuff like that. And there's, like, little quotes that are thrown, just like, let's just say the prince is back. It's like, gives me, like, those little, like, childish warm fuzzies. I'm like, aw, he said the thing!
Yeah.
It's great. We then get an announcement that it's Pete Dunne versus Damian Priest rematch next week, which they did a little highlight saying, here's how Damian Priest won before, low blow and the thingy. Yeah.
I will always say whenever Damian Priest comes out, he was previously Punishment Martinez.
Punishment Martinez, yeah. Yes.
Now, the unfortunate thing is, as much as the name changes in NXT are what they are,
mm-hmm.
other than the fact that Punishment Martinez is the best wrestling name in the world... and it's a damn shame that no one is now called Punishment Martinez.
Yeah.
It's just a shame.
I mean, his first name's Punishment, which is a bit weird.
No, I think it's really cool.
Then we got Finn Balor coming out to do a promo. This was so good. This was amazing. So he comes out to do his entrance. The music comes in, not the full demon entrance or anything, just the normal Balor music comes in. And he comes out, and when he normally does his little woo with the hands thing in time with the music, he does the first one and the crowd do it with him, and then it changes to a spotlight on him, and then he just puts his hands down slowly and does his two finger, his New Japan finger gun things, which was awesome. So I'm hoping that little hand wave thing was a one-off for this entrance.
That's the last time, yeah.
And that's the last time he's going to do it, and now there's no hand waves for you, crowd. No.
This is the thing. I think he now has to deny the crowd everything that was before. So in the video package before, there was a one of the sort of little sound bites from him was, you know, it's all fun and games and the fireworks are going and the pageantry, but, you know, but what about, you know, when it gets real, you know, that, mm-hmm. that kind of sentiment. And so, absolutely, so long as he's this version of Finn, never do the demon.
Agree, 100%.
And he shouldn't do, yeah, that should be the last time he does the thing with the hands. Like, yeah, all of that. Everything is now, I do think he's now fully fleshed out this character. And it's, he seems so confident in the role. Like, when he was on the main roster, he was trying to call me. When he was on the main roster, I never felt like he was comfortable in that character.
Yeah.
His promos, I mean, I know obviously there's issues with scripting and stuff. They are what they are. Some people do struggle with that. Some people just don't react well to words put in their mouth. Mm-hmm. I think he's clearly a good enough promo to not need that.
Yep.
But yeah, he never seemed comfortable in his own skin. He never seemed super confident, I didn't think.
Yeah.
It always seemed like he was always, this was always one step removed from what he wanted to be doing. Whereas this was like, just the energy he had when he was speaking. Like, it was, I was just like, this is blowing out the water any promo work he's done before.
Yeah, in absolutely, WWE. 100%, like, yeah.
It's not even close.
Yeah. So he comes out to the ring and the spotlight remains on him while he does his promo. And he's just saying how things change, huh? And he has this, like you said, totally new energy about him, totally new aura.
He felt 7 foot. He just was this. Yeah, it was incredible.
Yeah. And he says, 2 months ago, I'm laying down for what's supposed to be the hottest thing in the business just because he put on a new mask. I took off my mask and now I'm the hottest thing in the business. I was like, yeah. Oh, God, that's a great line. Yeah. He's saying, you know, everyone's got their opinions. The critics, the fans, some tough guys on Twitter, on social media. Everyone's got their opinions. He said, the problem is there's too many fans in the locker room when they should be sitting out here, pointing to the crowd. I don't watch this business. This business watches me. I'm like, who are you? Yeah. Where has this come from?
It was unbelievable.
And then he specifically targets Johnny Gargano, and he's saying he's one of those. He's a fan. He should be out sitting in the crowd. He's not a wrestler. And he's saying, you won't be Johnny Wrestling anymore. You'll be Johnny Watches Wrestling the way it's supposed to be. And then just like walks off. I'm like, what? Yeah. That's so good.
It was, you know, the good thing, it was quite short. It was probably only 2 minutes.
Yeah, tops, yeah.
The crowd reaction was interesting because obviously they're mad for Finn anyway.
Yeah.
There was the thing I like about NXT, the NXT crowd normally, is that they are part of the show and they're knowledgeable and they often play their part in the show.
Mm-hmm.
They often know when they're supposed to boo and they boo, and it creates, I think, some of the best moments that happen in NXT. Like,
apart from when it's anything to do with the Undisputed Era, because they're just too cool. You just got to cheer.
They are too
them.
Cool. You just got to cheer. But for example, like, you know, the way they the way Ciampa had genuine heat when he first turned on Johnny Gargano, like those big moments where the NXT crowd have really gone along with the show.
Yeah.
When actually, you know, they eventually did end up obviously cheering a lot for Ciampa anyway.
Of course, yeah.
But I just think that often, I think this was one of those moments where like they came out and it was like half and half, like people were really booing Finn.
Yeah.
And then some were chanting, and then. And then when he mentioned Johnny Gargano got a boo from the crowd because they were just really on board with Finn at this point. I think because he'd done the it's difficult with a smart crowd. So you do anything that kind of lifts the curtain on the business, they're on your side straight away.
Exactly. Yeah.
And as soon as I do think with that crowd, as soon as you put yourself on one side of kayfabe and everyone else on the other, they will sort of boo everyone else.
Yeah.
You know, depending on which side these. So I do think that was I don't have any particularly strong feelings about it. I just thought it was an interesting interplay, how the crowd sort of came in and out of their own character a little bit. And,
exactly.
But
yeah.
I think it's cool that his character is so. He's asking questions of this very smart crowd, you know, and I think that's great. I just thought the whole thing, the presence, the entrance, the spotlight was cool.
Mm-hmm.
There was no fat on the promo.
Yeah, it was just him saying exactly what he needed to say, laid out his motivations for why he's turned, why he doesn't like Johnny, and this is a new character, you should pay attention to this.
Yeah,
it was perfect.
Yeah,
we got a little video package for Tyler Bate versus Cameron Grimes, which is going to be happening later on, which they set up last week with the whole fake out punch thingy me bob on Cameron Grimes. Then we got Shane Thorne versus Bronson Reed. And just... you had a comment before this saying that someone had mentioned that it was there possibly in the running for their favorite less than five minute match.
Yeah. This was a lot of fun.
Just this was so fun.
Quite large, one particularly large Aussies, just kicking the hell out of it. I mean, the chop spot was brutal. I mean, yeah, it was great.
Yeah, just so much fun.
This is the thing that NXT has been able to continue to do, and actually, I think it's become an important thing to do, which is that I think the competitive squash has become a real USP of the NXT brand.
Yeah,
they do them all the time.
Yeah,
you know, you look at the rise of Oney Lorcan and stuff. Like the squashes they have. Like ultimately, this was kind of a squash. Mm-hmm. It was a 5 minute match with one comeback that led to a big finish.
Yeah.
Him hitting his finisher, Bronson Reed hitting his finisher, and Shane Thorne. But it was competitive. It was hard hitting. Shane Thorne looked strong. But it was no denying who the winner was and who was the sort of... And I just think NXT are so good at booking those.
Mm-hmm.
And most of that is down to performers, obviously.
Oh, yeah. Because
they just get that balance right. You know, no one's looking soft. No one... But you know who's gone over and you know why they've gone over. It's I don't know whether that comes from just... Obviously, there's a lot of experienced performers in NXT.
Mm.
But, yeah, I just think it's a brilliant thing that NXT do. And the fact that... This has now been something they've been doing for years now, and it doesn't matter who they throw into those kind of spots. These little 5 minute, 7 minute matches that are happening, they work every time.
Yeah,
and it doesn't matter who they throw in there. I just thought it was perfectly executed.
Yeah, it was absolutely amazing because Thorne came out, Bronson Reed came out, bell rings immediately. Shane Thorne goes drop kick, cannonball in the corner. I was like, oh, okay. This match is quick.
I think the second one pretty much decapitated Bronson Reed. It properly hit him in the head.
Yeah, and then Reed immediately comes back towards the next skip and just lariats him, and he does like a backflip off it. They do those massive chops like you mentioned before. It was literally them just like, I am going to hit you as hard as I can. Is that okay? They go, yes, I will also hit you back as hard as I can. Yeah. There was a massive big kick and a suplex from Thorne. Some really stiff kicks. There was a giant German suplex from Bronson Reed. Chucked him halfway across the ring. And then he does this like driver thing where he gets his legs over his shoulders with his head behind him. And then he just literally just like sits down and drops him. It's like,
I had to watch it. It was basically Hangman Page's finisher.
Mm-hmm.
But doing it sit out like a normal pile driver.
Yeah.
So... I presumed Shane Thorne's head went through the ring. It was the thing where he had him like that. I thought, oh, I wonder what he's going to do here. And then he just, as I was having that thought, he just dropped.
Oh, God. And then they had to, that was a near fall. That wasn't even the finish. And then Bronson heads to the top, but Thorne comes up and kicks him. And then he goes for like a, jumps up as if he's going to do like a rana off the top. And then Bronson just goes, nope, and just pushes him midair.
Spot like with his hand on his chest, just from a million feet, just threw him.
No, and just pushes him away, hits a splash for the win. Oh, it was so fun. Would highly recommend going and watching that match. Yeah. Like you said, it's only a fight like 5 minutes. So fun. Yeah.
That's the kind of thing they see. That's the kind of thing they should just put up wholesale on the YouTube channel.
Absolutely, yeah.
Just 100%. Put it up.
Yeah. We got Kathy Kelly, Dakota Sky, and Tegan Nox backstage. They were saying, just hyping up their women's tag team title match, saying they've been thinking about the women's tag team titles for a long time. Tegan said she can't think of a better way to do it than to win them with her best friend. And you could hear the crowd going, aww, in the background. It was so good. Proper audible, like, cuteness. Then we got that women's tag team title match.
Yes.
I thought this was so fun.
Yes.
This was great because there was some really fast-paced action to start. As it came out, I hate the fact that the Kabuki Warriors theme, but we won't talk about that. We've done that enough.
Yeah, it's...
We constantly talked about it. It's horrendous. Please change it because she's not even a bloody pirate. Anyway, fast-paced action to start. Kabuki Warriors took control and it went into an ad break. It was like, cool, standard stuff so far. Came back and Kabuki Warriors are still in control, just... taking down Dakota Kai, stopping her from getting a tag. Really cool, like, submissions, playing off the knee injuries that she's had and all that. There was both of them constantly attacking, like, their knees constantly. It's a great story. Some really cool-looking submissions from Kairi Sane. They were amazingly just constantly cut off the tags from Kai Tanaka every single time. Like, oh, she's getting close. This is the hot tag. No, it's not. This is the hot tag. Nope, no, it's not. Kairi Sane had this awesome spot where she just started tanking hits like she was 7 foot tall.
Yeah,
she just goes, I'm going to hit, and she just goes, nope.
Just started no-selling.
Nope. Hits her again. It's like, nope. It's like, you're like 4 foot seven. Yeah. What's happening? It was awesome. And then it goes into another ad break with Kabuki Warriors still in control. It was like, this match is going long. Like, yeah, oh yeah, my yeah. God. Came back, and then finally, Kai makes her comeback. She hits this massive scorpion kick onto Sane, and finally she starts crawling her way over. She finally gets the hot tag onto Nox, and Nox just goes mental.
Yeah.
Just comes in, chokeslam, knees, everything. It was awesome. Eventually, the finish came when she goes... sorry, just before the finish, she went for the shiniest wizard, Tegan Nox's finisher. That got counted into a knee bar from Asuka, mm-hmm. which was just such a smooth transition. Yeah. I loved it. Just it going just for the knee and then grab.
It's a shame that it was the wrong knee.
Yeah, but it was still cool, though.
It was really cool, but it was. I think that was the one. That's the one thing. If you were to be, if you wanted to be an absolute knob,
which you are being,
which
right
I'm
now.
Being in this review, you could say that perhaps she should have got the bad knee.
It still looked cool, okay? yeah, but then Kairi Sane came to break that up. They had a quadruple down spot straight after, yeah. which was awesome. And then it gets to the finish where Asuka uses the green mist while the referee's not looking, kicks her in the head. Kairi Sane does the insane elbow for the win. I thought they did an amazing job of covering up her face so the referee wouldn't see it. Mm. After they did the green mist, she went down face first,
yeah.
which was awesome. They did the insane elbow to the back of her head, and then as she's pinning her, she covered her face with her body so the ref couldn't see. I thought, yeah. it's little touches like that that really make the green mist spot work.
Yeah, I think so. I just love how over the mist is.
Yeah, I know. It's
the
crazy.
Crowd
the crowd went
mad.
Mental.
Yeah. Also, it did come out of nowhere.
Yeah, absolutely.
She was just, she just got randomly turned and just... There it goes, and it was
there's the finish.
It totally, and you could be forgiven for forgetting how good Asuka is, seeing as they're not on telly anymore. But when were they ever going to get that amount of time to just have a match?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was so good to see, and particularly Asuka, she was sort of in the sort of middle third. She was kind of largely the one in kind of control.
Yeah,
and I love her style of just. The way she just stalks around, really, like, because you think you associate women's wrestling, I think, a lot with pace and
mm-hmm.
kind of, you know, they do a lot, they do a lot of that kind of quick comebacks and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
With her, I love how she slows everything down and just picks apart, and
yeah.
she just has this sort of foreboding style. It's
yeah.
just, and then just goes into these moments of like viciousness or whatever. I forgot how much I love just her work.
She's amazing.
Even when it's
yeah.
even when it's quite basic, just sort of time wasting whilst there's an ad break on.
yeah.
Like, it was just good stuff. Like yeah, yeah, it was great.
It was really, really cool stuff. Then we got that whole angle that we mentioned before with the women's war game match being announced, which was cool. And then we got Tyler Bate versus Cameron Grimes and his hat.
Mm. It is a cool hat. I like the hat.
You're the only person that likes the hat.
I kind of like the hat. I'm not against... I like hats, though.
You're uninvited from any future NXT reviews. This was a fun match, though. Really, really liked that. Went through an ad break. There was the whole really cool spots back and forth, like both of them getting in like their signature offense, like Cameron Grimes doing his little backflip into the German suplex yeah. thing. It was awesome.
Yeah, that was so smooth.
So cool. It was a really cool comeback from Bate where he did a really cool like version of a kip-up where he went like straight-legged in the air and then went down and did a kip-up. It
yeah,
was really cool.
Well, this is again one of those... I'll get my notes out. It's again one of those NXT star matches.
Mm-hmm.
That, I don't know why I keep calling that, because I just feel like they had to develop a certain match style for the shorter time frame. So this kind of fits into that. Like, these are two guys who they've got stuff going on in the sort of lower part of the card, but yeah, we've got time. Give them a match
yeah.
and just go and just do your stuff at each other
mm-hmm.
and. Which will be entertaining.
Yep.
And we'll, and then that's all we need from you. Thanks for coming. That was very entertaining.
Yeah. Like, that was great. And guess what? You both look really good coming out of it.
It was just, yeah. I think, I understand why the hat doesn't help, even though I like it.
It's a bad hat.
Yeah. I like how Cameron Grimes is getting more and more time.
Yes, me
just
too.
Just generally speaking. Yep. And there is a rich history of in NXT. If you are just on TV. If you are just now proper TV.
Now
if you
TV,
if you are on TV regularly having matches of any description, generally speaking, you find yourself in a much better position a year later.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he is one of those
you know, and you'd put, you know, like Keith Lee's kind of gone up in that, like Dijakovic, you know, those, there's a few of them now who are starting to just find their way slightly higher and higher and higher. And it's great booking for one, because, you know, he needs the win.
Yep.
This is because of the angle that then happens. This is a perfect time for him to get that win. You know, it just, again, it's simple, it's smart, it's a great match, a lot of fun. I like watching those two work any day of the week.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it was great.
Yeah. There's a lovely counter where Bate does his little dive into the ropes thingy, and then Grimes hit the what's now called the collision course, which is the spinning Spanish fly crossbody
thing.
Whatever
it is, but it's awesome.
It was cool. Then the finish comes where Bate's in control. He dives to the outside, and then Killian Dane is in the crowd, who's just like, because they had beef from last week. And then Bate gets a little bit distracted. As he gets back in the ring, out of nowhere comes Cameron Grimes with the cave-in, that double stomp to the chest for the win, which was super cool. And then Killian Dane comes in afterwards, beats up Bate a little bit, does a massive cannonball into the steps with Bate there. And then he leans into him, just says, "Tell your friend Pete Dunne, we have unfinished business."
Mm.
Cool. Liked it.
Done.
Super cool stuff.
"I'm a wrestler and I would like to have a fight."
Yes.
"Thank you for coming."
Lovely stuff. Thank you.
"None of this is hard unless you make it hard."
Exactly. We then get Undisputed Era and Riddle and Lee are warming up backstage. And then we got a video package for Angel Garza, which was some really proper babyface stuff.
Really? Yeah.
Really babyface stuff in this, because I thought he was a heel. I thought, or at least like a tweener. But this was like, you know what? I'm doing this for my family. You guys know my uncle from, you know, back in the day in WCW and all that stuff. And he was wrestling doing this. I just want to make him proud. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
It'd be all like super cocky and arrogant. What's this?
Yeah.
It's
definitely a full character change.
Yes. Seems it. Yeah. It really seems it. So I'm going to be curious when he next comes out, because I'm assuming he's going to be in line for a NXT Cruiserweight Championship match against Lio Rush, because at least that's the direction they were going before. So, like, when he comes out next, is he just going to be the same guy? Just being like, "Hey, I just want to make my dad proud by tearing off my pants." Yeah. I don't know.
I'm still super handsome.
Yeah. I'm
I loved his character. I think
so good.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it'd be a shame to lose that.
Yeah. I hope he doesn't lose that. But also, I don't know what the point of this video package was if he doesn't.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
So, I do think, I mean, yeah, this is a handbrake turn that they've changed the character now.
Yeah. I hope not. I want him to keep the old one. Then we get on to the main event of the night, which was Keith Lee and Matt Riddle versus the Undisputed Era. This was so fun. Because this was roughly a 15-minute match or so.
Mm-hmm.
And about, like you mentioned to me earlier when we were watching it in the office, about 10 minutes of that was just Keith Lee and Matt Riddle just being awesome.
I would say most of this match is encompassed by two very, very long hot tags.
Yeah.
Where it's just one of, mainly Keith Lee, just beating up the Undisputed Era.
Yep.
In various ways.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just some of the moves, not even necessarily like some of the really crazy stuff he's been doing with Dijakovic, but just like right at the very start, like doing like jumping over both of them. And you know, at one point he does a moonsault from the second rope that just is just super clean.
Yeah.
Like the Riddle nearly kicked Kyle O'Reilly across the room at one point on the outside. Like it was awesome. And it was also peak Undisputed, who I love how they do that brilliant thing where like you only have to give them the tiniest margin and they will cheat and win and run away with everything.
Yes.
It's a great thing that they've really, because obviously because of their size, I think they've had to find how do we dominate. And it's like, well, because we know we can't. Yes, of course Keith Lee can beat us both up.
Yeah.
But what if he turns around for 3 seconds? Then what can we do? Mm-hmm. You know, it was really good work from them as well to just, first of all, accept the beating of a lifetime.
Yeah.
And then also with the way it kind of all wrapped itself up. I just it was so fun, this match.
Yeah. And even right at the start when they were just doing chops, and it was literally you just had a chop from Matt Riddle and then he held him to do another chop, and then he turns around and Keith Lee
oh my god,
skadoosh, straight on your chest, and then he grabbed, I think it was Kyle's second, grabbed his arms, and Kyle was just like, "No!" You could just see Keith Lee winding up his hands like, uh-oh.
Kyle O'Reilly's so facials are
He's so funny. Next to none.
He's so funny.
Unbelievable stuff.
Yeah, I just thought, I just think, I mean, I'm coming at this in a partisan way because I just think Keith Lee should be, he should be a uber mega star.
Yeah.
And I just think he should be, and he should be that now.
Mm-hmm.
I like the fact that they're slowly building him up and he's getting a lot of time. And he's clearly, he was clearly getting a lot of time in this match to just be himself. And it was great. I just thought the whole thing was incredible.
Yeah.
Matt Riddle was surprisingly quiet in it, I thought, actually.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean,
he's subdued. But
he hit a jackhammer right before the break.
He did hit a jackhammer.
Which was furthering that whole Goldberg thing they got going on.
And then he just did a sort of assay moonsault outside with a twist in it.
But
it looked like he decided to do the twist about halfway through the air. It was just like, oh, okay, I could just do that.
Sure, why not?
It did that great thing where I think Keith Lee and Matt Riddle are very good at this, which is like whatever energy the match starts at, they just sort of hold that until something kind of gets in the way. So if the match starts super quick, they just go.
Yeah,
it was really cool.
Yeah, and then finish came around when Colin Strong ran interference, classic Undisputed Era stuff. They do actually take both of them out, but then that runs a distraction. They get involved again. They take Riddle out, which then it means that... was it Riddle that was left in the ring? Lee? I can't remember.
No, they beat up Keith Lee.
They beat up Keith Lee, yeah. They hit the total elimination and they get the win. And then the Undisputed Era beat down Lee after the match as well because they're heels. Daddy Ciampa comes out. Bloody love Daddy Ciampa. Comes out with his crutch and starts wailing away on all of them, which was great. They stand tall in the ring afterwards. Riddle manages to hit his final flash knee, and Lee chucks Kyle O'Reilly onto the rest of the Undisputed Era on the outside. And then Ciampa says, Goldie, you'll have to wait. Daddy's going to war. So a men's War Games match as well, do you reckon?
Yes, 100%.
I'm kind of, I don't want to say disappointed, but I would rather they just do the women's one. Because Undisputed Era have been in every War Games match so far. I want them to not be in it for once and just have... Let's just have the women do their thing. Because then we can have Ciampa versus Cole. We could have Riddle and Lee go for the tag titles. And we've got more matches for the card. I don't necessarily think having two War Games matches on the same card is a good idea. Same thing as, like, at Hell in a Cell. I don't think having two Hell in a Cell matches on the same card is a good idea.
My only counter to that would be that I do think War Games is still fresh enough as a concept to the...
Okay.
To that. It's like, you know... but also, I do think now that the War Games pay-per-view exists, and the Undisputed Era are a team of four...
Mm-hmm.
You can't not do it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't like, do you know what I mean? Like I would like to see a men's version of what they did with the women's thing, which is just have a loose alliance of people and make that the War Games. I would rather Undisputed Era weren't in it.
Yes.
And somehow the War Games match actually had lots of stipulations as to who would they would then face for different titles. So if they were somehow in their own feuds and then it kind of whoever they were feuding with, I think that would be that would just flesh out, I think, more of the roster on the men's side like they have with the women's.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know how, I think it would almost be a stranger decision not to do it. Like you've got War Games, now you've got 2-4s. Like,
yeah.
You know, what, you can't not do that then.
Yeah.
That would be. So I understand, I get where you're coming from. I think they sort of have to, don't they?
So it seems like it's going to be Undisputed Era versus Ciampa, Riddle, Lee. And I don't know who else, because you'd think Gargano, but he's kind of tied up with Finn Balor.
Mm-hmm.
And considering we're going to have two War Games matches, we're going to need other matches to fill the card. So you'd assume Balor versus Gargano is going to be one of those matches.
Yeah. So does this also mean that there's going to be no men's gold on the line in the whole of War Games?
Yeah.
Unless, are they going to put all the belts on the line somehow War Games?
They could do that, but then also... I feel like it would get too convoluted if they do that. Like, oh, if he pins this person, then they win this. It's like, well, that's not...
So in that case, they'll have to keep Finn and Johnny separate for a big main event.
Yeah.
So that makes up for the fact there's no gold line, but there will be no gold on the line for the men's side.
There's going to be no gold at all. Because they might do the... So they'll do a cruiserweight title match, which would probably be Garza versus Rush, probably. They'll do Balor versus Gargano, two War Games matches, and probably one other.
Yeah.
which might be like a priest Dunn type thing.
Yeah,
Dunn versus Dane. Dunn versus Dane. That's probably the card we're looking at in a minute, which is a good card. I wouldn't say it's the best one. However, the two War Games matches could be unbelievable. Yeah. Plus, Balor Gargano could be show stealer.
I'm not a big fan of... I don't want to see the main belt not being in main events too often.
Yes.
That is the slippery slope that the main roster got into over the last 15 years.
Yeah.
And is nowhere near in sight of getting out of that.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope this is kind of... They don't keep that because they've done this once or twice now.
They did it with Gargano and Ciampa.
That was it.
When
yeah.
Aleister Black was champ, yeah.
Yeah, so I hope they veer away from that as quick. This is fine now because Finn's hot. That's fine. But I hope this very quickly becomes. They need to get Adam Cole doing something where he's the main. He's the big dog that they're coming after again.
I think they might have the men's War Games match as the main event, though. So technically, the title would be in it. And then you just have Balor and Gargano as like either the opener or like third match. I reckon that'd be cool. No, because then you probably want a War Games match as the opener, so then you have as much space between the two War Games matches as possible.
Do you think they might open with the women's War Games
match? Yeah, I think so, and then close with the men's one, and then have Balor Gargano as the third match, and then you have Dunn Dane as like your second. Your cruiserweight one is your second, and Dunn Dane is your fourth.
And it also makes sense because either way, you've got to keep the two War Games matches as far apart from each other on the card anyway.
Yes.
You can't have them.
No, you can't have them close at all.
So actually, yeah, having them kind of top and tail. Yeah.
I think that will work. Anyway.
I wanted to quickly bring up was I wrote down as a general thing in NXT, the wrestlers really want to be a champion and they hold on to belts because they really want to keep them. It's a novel concept, but one that seems to be working. and it's just one of those things where you notice it throughout the whole show that coded into every single match, you know, other than obviously you've got specific feuds like the Killian Dane one, for example, but coded into everyone's performance on some level is the idea that they are somewhat working towards getting to a point where they can have a shot at a title.
Yeah.
It's just, I know it sounds so obvious, but that isn't something that happens a lot in other parts of the company.
That's the ultimate goal, is you want to be a champ. That's the point of it. Yeah. People want
to
be the best.
If you told Cameron Grimes to go, oh man, we've got a minute to fill before, can you just go out and do a promo? He would talk about getting a shot at the North American title.
Exactly. Say,
or the cruiserweight. Yeah. Like, that would be, it's coded into everything. I just think it's just one of those simple things that needs to be pointed out because it's so simple, it's so effective, and it allows all the talent to have enough breathing space for their characters where they've got a simple motivation that they can then develop that from. I just think it's
exactly
simple and brilliant.
NXT is very, very good.
NXT is very, very good.
Who'd have thunk it? So I've got another email here from Oliver, who says, hello, King Chopper. No one else, just me. I'm here to heed the call of your request for more emails. Thank you. After hearing your comments about not liking water and other bland foods, I thought it may comfort you to know you're not the only one. Well, that's nice. Yeah, I had a thing with Ollie. I was saying, I really struggle to drink just like water. Even though I know, obviously, you've got to drink water. It's very, you know, good for you.
It stops you dying.
It stops you dying. And also, you know, just drinking water is good for bodily functions and all that stuff. I still struggle to just drink plain water, which is why I always have, you know, cordial and squash and stuff like that. Because it's the closest thing to water that's not water. Because I just really struggle with bland foods and drinks and stuff. So Ollie carries on. Say, I too hate the taste of water. I get to...
Well, that feels like he stepped up there. He's now said he hates it. Now that's I don't think there's an animal on earth that hates water.
It's too bland. You can't hate it.
The worst you could be is have no opinion.
Indifference.
About water.
Yeah. I get to thirst quench from it. I think that was almost English. Whatsoever. I get no thirst quench from it whatsoever. There we go.
That's not true.
And foods like avocado, mushrooms, aubergine, rice, etc. have no effect on my tongue. I might as well be chewing cardboard. All I can put this down to is that ever since I was about 6, I've been obsessed with chili sauce to the point where I've burnt away all of my taste buds. I literally put it on everything. I'd eat a fridge magnet if I had enough of that sweet, sweet spice on it.
Wow.
So that, then Ollie put me on the spot on the podcast we did because he said, do you have a lot of like sources with yourself? I was like, yeah, bloody love sources because they make everything better. So then he made me rank my top five on the spot. So now Ollie comes in to rank my top five sauces, if that is to be a thing. Mayo, barbecue, Caesar sauce, hummus, that's not a sauce, and suffering level chili sauce.
Now, hold on. This is very confusing. So he simultaneously doesn't like water.
Yes.
Has so scalded his own mouth through his pursuit of spicy flavors.
Yes.
Doesn't even like mushrooms and avocado, which are quite watery. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's
yeah, might have something to do with it.
And then ranks mayonnaise as his top sauce.
No, that's number five. Sorry, but
oh, still, okay,
top fifth.
Okay, but still.
Still.
It's a bit spit on. I do think that clearly there's a difference between not liking something and burning parts of your mouth off so as to render those flavours unavailable to you.
Yeah.
I do think that's slightly different. Although, to be fair, 90% of taste is smell.
Yeah.
So maybe
is it 90%? I thought it was a little bit less than that.
Maybe it's 70.
Yeah.
It's
a lot.
Taste is mainly smell.
Yes.
Because your taste buds die as you get older anyway, which mm-hmm. is why like kids don't really like olives.
Yeah.
Because the acidic ones are very sensitive when you're a kid. They get less sensitive as you get older.
I think I'm still a kid. That'd be why I don't like coffee. I don't like olives.
You don't like coffee?
No. Hate coffee. Can't stand the taste.
I think a lot of people don't like coffee. That's not.
Yeah.
That's not that crazy.
I know.
I think coffee's an acquired taste.
Yes, I'd say so. Like, I don't actively, like, I won't spit it back out if I accidentally drink some, which I used to.
Yeah.
It was that bad, but now it's like, oh, this is not what I want to drink.
Yeah.
But yeah, I still don't like olives.
Oh, do you not?
No, I hate them.
Oh, I love olives. Yeah. I like vinegary things like that.
See, I'm just not a huge fan of vinegar as a whole.
I used to know someone who used to drink vinegar.
What?
Mm.
Why?
They were an idiot.
Okay, yeah, makes sense. yeah, they've also listed hummus as a sauce.
Yeah,
which,
that's not a sauce.
Which isn't a sauce.
Although it does go...
There's also that, which I can't read.
Oh, tzatziki.
Bless you.
Now, they've put tzatziki slash hummus.
Yeah.
So they've successfully identified two Mediterranean dips,
mm-hmm.
but they're very different.
But they're not sauces.
Neither of them are sauces. Tzatziki is cucumber.
Mm-hmm.
It's mainly cucumber, like shredded or diced up and stuff.
Right, yeah.
Hummus is obviously chickpeas.
Yes.
Hummus is probably more Middle Eastern, actually, I suppose, isn't it?
More so.
So
yeah.
I don't know why those two are ranked together because they don't look, taste, or smell remotely the same.
Mm-hmm.
Again, tzatziki is very cooling and mild.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that only loves the hottest of hot chilies or the cool, refreshing feel of a cold, wet cucumber.
Yeah.
This is someone who I think needs to find some middle ground in their life. It's like I'll only. It's like they could only. It's all or nothing with this guy.
Yeah,
and I think
exactly.
I think there is. Now they do say variety is the spice of life.
Mm.
And this sounds like this, but I think this is too much variety.
Yeah, cool it down, man. Yeah. Not literally, but like just chill your variety, man. It's quite funny actually because his name is Ollie Flood, but if you take out the L, he's Ollie Food, which is funny because they're talking about sauces and
stuff. And what do you do if he's talking about cars?
Then it's.
I suppose you could be Ollie Ford. Sort of ruined my own reasoning there.
That was bad. I didn't even read the end of the email. He just said, hope that isn't too stupid of an email for the show. Have you heard us before? Thanks for all the great audio content. All the best to you and the lovely boys. Well, thank you very much for your email.
Yeah, thanks for the honesty.
Appreciate it. Yeah, thank you for your sharing your journey, your voyage into the spice world. I think that's probably all we got time for, I reckon, because we've got to actually record this before we do our meeting in 45 minutes. So
let's do that.
Yeah. Thank you very much for listening, everyone. This was the NXT podcast. We'll be back. Me and Dave will be back tomorrow doing the SmackDown review. And then Ollie and I will be back on Monday with the Raw review, I think. Yep. Yep. That's how it's going. Right. Thank you all for listening. Love you all. Goodbye. Right.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.